flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stretch run of Grant and Danny. We are taking you up to 6:30 tonight, live on The Fan. I'm in New Orleans at Radio Row. Danny is back in the Navy Yard in our Half Street studios. The show today and every day is sponsored by our friends, the law firm of Condori and Murad. From estate planning and elder law to real estate transactions and probate administration, their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today. Visit kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. We've got your Caps power play and some news and notes before we say goodbye at the end of this year's segment. But speaking of attorneys, one that practiced in his past career before becoming the leader of the Pro Football Talk operation, Mike Florio, joins us now on Radio Row in New Orleans. Mike, we found out yesterday via owner Josh Harris at a press conference that the name Commanders is here to stay. Washington will not be changing their name again anytime soon. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, it's funny. As the Commanders were progressing toward the postseason and beginning to have success, I remembered a discussion Chris Sims and I had 3 years ago because he hates the Bengals uniforms, the helmets, everything about them. But as they were winning in 2021, he said, you know, nothing makes a bad uniform look better than winning. And nothing makes a name that people aren't warming up to sound better than winning. And all of a sudden, there's a legacy and a future that's attached to that name that transforms it into something larger than what it was. And it makes that connection to the DNA of the fan base. And now it's just Commanders. It's Commanders all the way. And this doesn't surprise me at all. Unequivocal, clear. Commanders is the name, and they've got an immediate future. And really, for as long as Jaden Daniels is healthy and playing like he played last year, they've got a future that's going to be very bright.
And Harris came out and essentially said that quiet part out loud, where so there's now some positive connotation with it. And I would imagine, he didn't mention this, but I mean, the jersey sales of Jaden Daniels, the merchandise, you never saw Commanders anything a year ago. We had rallies going up to the NFC Championship game as a station. Everyone was in Commanders gear. So they saw some type of tangible, I'm sure, realization that the name maybe isn't popular still, but people were more able to tolerate it.
Oh, absolutely. And it's only going to get more popular because they're going to be a team that is talked about throughout the offseason. They're going to be one of the trendy picks to maybe get to the Super Bowl next year. You look at the NFC, it's much more wide open than the AFC because you don't have to deal with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. So I think that it's just going to continue and they see where it's going. And last year was, let's just wait and see. They waited, they saw, and they realized that the name is putting down roots. That's what it's all about, putting down roots. It's putting down roots into the minds and the wallets of the fans. And so why would you even consider changing it?
Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio. One of the concessions that they are willing to make, it seems like, for the disenfranchised generation of fans who don't like the name and didn't like that it was changed, is that they are trying to do more to reach back to the old era. And they're talking about uniform changes. Curious what you know about like some of the policies. It's apparently really hard to change uniforms within a couple of years of when you just did it in terms of a full-time uniform, but what insight can you shed on that?
Well, the one thing that I know that makes it easy to answer this question is the league has to approve everything that you do, and at a minimum it's 1 year in advance. You know, there's always, or at least there should be, a greater sensitivity to the fact that you have fans who go out and spend money on the current uniform, and then they get the rug pulled out from under them with a new uniform. And I always, when I know a team is going to change its uniform and it's out there, I make sure I remind fans from time to time, don't go buy that jersey unless you want to have, as a memento or a souvenir, the old uniform, because new ones are coming. Wait for the new ones. So I think that's part of it. And any fans who would start plunking down money for Commanders gear now would have every right to be upset if they pull the rug out from under them and change the name later. So I think it's all part of this broader process of, when's the right time to do it? When's the league going to approve it? What are we going to do? They work with Nike. I call it the Nikeification of the NFL, and it drives me crazy. We got all these different combinations. Like, the Broncos had 9 different uniforms. They're like Oregon. I always feared when Nike got involved that teams were going to be like Oregon. And I just like to, and it's not like a get-off-my-lawn thing, although some would say it is. I just like to be able to turn on a game and know who's playing.
Right.
And when I grew up, you knew who was playing when you turned on the TV. And now you got to sit and ask yourself, who is that team? Which team? There's a Broncos uniform that looks like the Texans. And if you have to check the score bug to see who's playing, there's something that isn't satisfying about that. So regardless, I could see some changes coming. I don't know what that means. I don't know. I kind of, that's it. But why would you, like, along with the name becoming popular now, the uniform looks better. When you see the Commanders, you're more inclined to, like, perk up than when you used to. And that uniform just takes on a better vibe when the guys that are playing it are winning games.
Mike Florio's with us on G&D here in D.C. So the other of the big three back home that non-football everybody cares about, covered the name, covered the uniforms, is the stadium. And you cover the league globally. So you've seen, over the last few years, a bevy of stadium deals come and go, and some teams will decide and then pretty quickly figure it out. This is years and years of politics in the making in D.C., but they are at a glacier pace moving toward having a stadium in the city, maybe. Roger Goodell spoke about that yesterday, said it would be great for the league, great for the country, I think he even said. What do you make of where they're at now in their quest for a stadium in 2030?
The one thing that we have to remember, because this bubbled up when Elon Musk decided to chime in on the RFK bill and said no taxpayer money should be devoted to this. And the blowback was, there is no taxpayer money in the bill that would give D.C. the ability for 99 years to basically do what it wants with that land. The reality is, they're not putting a shovel in the ground unless the NFL has some public body that is paying a crap load of money. They won't allow it. They won't approve it. There are very rare circumstances where you know going in, like when Stan Kroenke wanted to go to L.A., I'll pay for it all myself. I'll do it all myself. I'll keep all the revenue streams. A very small percentage of owners want to own and operate their own stadium. They don't have to worry about public bodies. They don't have to worry about committee meetings. They do it however they want to do it. The Patriots are an example of one of them. The Rams, another. Most teams want public money as a subsidy for the building of the stadium. And what they're doing now is, and it's a broad business transaction. Anytime you start talking about football being business, fans don't want to hear it, but it's huge business. You got D.C., you got Maryland. I think they'd like to get Virginia to the table. They're not going to move. It's a matter of leveraging one location against the other to get the best possible deal. And yeah, there might not be a single taxpayer dollar that's ever devoted to the D.C. effort, but the possibility of them choosing D.C. and maybe privately financing it gets you a better deal to stay in Maryland, where they will give you taxpayer money. So there will be taxpayer money devoted to this. They are not going to pay for the stadium by themselves. It's just a question of how much. And even after they do the deal, the Jaguars had to do this. They got a deal where the city and state, and I don't know how much the city, state, county was involved, but public money was involved in this renovation of their stadium. The owners still have to approve it. And the owners can say, you can get a better deal. Go back and get a better deal. So somebody is going to be giving the Commanders a better deal. And winning and having a great team and having a bright future, that's a way to get people to say, sure, let's give them public money for this thing. We all love this team. Let's see it be as good as it can be.
So I was told over a year ago that they would have a roof on the stadium, wherever it was, and that it probably wouldn't be a retractable roof. Because the idea I was explained, retractable roofs, when you have the ability to close it, they're closed almost all the time anyway. It's too much money, but that the roof is necessary to host the events. Is that kind of what you see now, or is that not the same thinking as other teams?
I think more and more of these teams, when it's time to sit down and crunch the numbers and engage in the business of football, if you have a venue that can be used all year long for concerts, Final Four, etc., you can put projections together that will get you a better net result, more profit, more justification for the public money. Now, I know in Cleveland they're insisting on doing this. They want to build a dome stadium in Brook Park outside of downtown Cleveland, and it sparked litigation under the law that was put in place after Art Modell took the team to Baltimore back in 96. But there's some pushback on this idea that just having a dome stadium automatically means all this money's going to rain from the sky. There's only so many events. There's only so many bands that are going on tour that can fill a football stadium. But that's the idea. You put a dome on it, you can maybe get a Super Bowl. You can get concerts in December, January, February, March. You can maybe get Final Four. You can do all sorts of things beyond just have, what, 10, 11 football games a year.
One of the things that might be coming to D.C. sooner than later is the draft, obviously. How has that event traveling benefited the league, or what's the business of that look like? Because the numbers every year that go out that they announce are astronomical.
The commissioner gets a lot of credit for the NFL draft becoming a traveling roadshow. What happened was they did it every year at Radio City Music Hall. There was a scheduling conflict one year that Radio City Music Hall would not clear. So the NFL said, screw it, we'll go to Chicago. And they were in Chicago for 2 years. And after that second year, they realized we could take this show regularly on the road. And I think the moment, if you remember the crowd shot in Philadelphia, yeah, of all those people, that I remember watching and thinking, holy crap, this is never going to go back to New York City unless it's open air somewhere with 100,000 people, and they're going to go from city to city, from town to town, from team to team, and it gives all of the teams that don't get a shot at hosting a Super Bowl something where they become the focus of the entire NFL and even beyond it, because the draft, even though it's meaningless, you could do it by a group text. You don't have to have, you know, I call it the ultimate reality show about nothing. You don't have to do this. You don't need a stage. You don't need a band. You don't need the commissioner there. You don't need the prospects there. It can all be done via social media and cell phone. But they've transformed this thing into an event that now gets thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people. The Detroit crowd was amazing. Lambeau Field is going to probably have more. And then Pittsburgh. And then, yeah, it'll be in Washington. And it'll just make its way around. And it's a way that the NFL, you know, they always say the best thing you can do is make money while you're sleeping. The NFL sleeps from February to September. Any money they can make when the league is in hibernation is free money. And now they've got like these various tent poles in the offseason. That's the biggest one. And it draws in more people than the Super Bowl from the standpoint of people there. And yeah, Washington will have it at some point, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger because I think every city wants to try to outdo the cities that hosted it before.
A couple of moments left with Mike Florio. Whenever I have you on the show with Danny, we always like asking you, based on your legal background, about whatever's going on in the league. This Justin Tucker situation right now, we've seen teams immediately release guys. Like Washington did this with Brandon McManus. And then eventually charges get dropped. And obviously that doesn't mean he didn't do anything. But there's some blowback on the back end. How do you think this goes with Tucker, who's got a long runway with the Ravens? They know the guy very well. This is very different than even the Deshaun Watson situation, as linked as they are.
I think one of the reasons Washington moved so quickly with Brandon McManus is you can throw a rock and find a kicker. They're interchangeable. They're everywhere. So am I going to take a kicker who's, you know, middle of the pack, who has baggage, or am I going to take a kicker who's middle of the pack who doesn't have baggage? And that becomes a very simple proposition. I think with the Ravens situation, what will happen is at some point it's going to reach critical mass for them and they're going to make a decision. And I wrote about this over the weekend. From a cap standpoint, it makes sense for them to try to kick the can into March. When the league year begins, there's a way to cut him. It's the post-June 1 designation where the cap charge splits over 2 years. It's a more manageable way to exit. If we get more reports from the Baltimore Banner, which has been doing incredible work on this, of more people making these accusations, then maybe they have to move sooner. And I know it's he said, she said, and I know people always say, well, it's about this, it's about that, why'd you wait so long? Look, the argument is the person who's making the accusation is lying. You can only make that argument for so many people before it hits a critical mass, where we just know there can't be that many people that are engaged in this conspiracy to gang up on this guy and lie about it. And I don't know what that number is.
I was going to say, from your background,
Watson was clearly on the on the wrong end of 25.
Is two that, like, in law generally, is one to two the biggest leap? Or, like, nine is a ton, obviously. But someone could argue, and I'm not trying to say that anybody's lying. Someone could say, well, it's easier to jump in when more people are. It's like, what's the number that you think is like, okay, this is not just a he said, she said. Now it's a he said, a lot of she said.
You know, you remind me of the old commercial, and I'm going to date myself by saying this, where the kid asks the owl how many licks to get to the center of the Tootsie Roll Tootsie Pop. Yeah. I think it's somewhere between two and seven. And seven is relevant to me because the last case I ever tried involved a manager who was fired ostensibly because she didn't do a good enough job on her performance reviews of the seven employees who reported to her. And each and every one of them said she didn't do a very good job with our performance evaluations. And when it was time to try the case, it's like, you know what? I'm not going to fight that battle. I'm going to say that others have done the same thing and they got to stay, because seven people aren't going to come together and tell the same lie. It's just not going to happen. So somewhere between two and seven. And if that's true, Tucker's up to 10. And I just think that you got to strip. They do it for every other guy. You strip away the history. You strip away the name. And you ask yourself, going forward, what's best for us? And I think for the Ravens, if I'm making that decision, you say $4.2 million. Tucker's on the downward slope of his career. You can find another kicker who doesn't have baggage. And I think where we are right now, I'll be surprised if they don't cut him when the new league year begins. The only question is, can they delay it until the middle of March?
All right, finally, I'll let you steer this last one. What is the business of football storyline? Like, what are you most interested in covering in the next year or on the horizon now, in terms of where this league's headed moving forward?
Well, 18 games is inevitable, and I know that it's been characterized that the commissioner tapped the brakes on 18 games yesterday. I don't believe it. I think that there's an effort behind the scenes to get the union to agree to 18 games. And one of the most fascinating pieces of evidence, Grant, is that 2 weeks ago, there was a ruling in a collusion grievance filed by the union regarding the failure of teams to give guaranteed contracts to certain veteran quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, and Russell Wilson. And the union lost. Now, the union proved there was some effort to collude, but ultimately there were no damages. The NFL won, and the NFL hasn't done a victory lap. The NFL isn't crowing about it. I think they're working with the union to try to not embarrass the union. There's a 61-page ruling out there that I'm waiting to see, and I think people who cover the league and care about the league should want to see it and see what the evidence was, and et cetera, et cetera. I think the league is cooperating with the union to set the tone. I'm told there's a laser focus to get an agreement to 18 games. I think it could come by the end of the year, and I think 2027 is the year to watch, because the 2026 season, Super Bowl set, and it's President's Day weekend, 2026 season. 2027, we know the location of the Super Bowl. It's Atlanta. We don't know the date. I'm watching 27 as the first year for 18 games. I think it's a real possibility, and I think the commissioner is trying to just kind of downplay it. Don't create some big headline. 18 games coming. You don't want to give up your leverage in the negotiations, but I think it's much farther along than he alluded to yesterday.
Enjoy the week. Enjoy the game. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, pal.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, right here on Grant and Danny, live from Radio Row on 106.7 The Fan. A lot of meat on that bone, Danny, but I want to go back to the beginning of the conversation. His thoughts on the stadium and the name. He's super plugged in on those types of things. It is funny to me the difference between the national narrative about the name Commanders and local. Whereas I really believe nationally, people are not in the weeds on how unpopular it is.
Right.
They don't think it's a bad name. I don't hear a whole lot of joning on the name from national people. But, man, locally, is it unpopular.
Yeah, and I get that, because to me, the whole import of it is, this is a brand. This is something that you have a fandom with, an association with. Whereas nationally, it's just a data point, right? Like the Arizona Cardinals. I don't know how many Cardinals are in Arizona. I don't think that matters at all. But like locally, they could go, I can't stand it. There's never been a single Cardinal in the whole state of Arizona, or whatever. I'm making something up. But here we have this thing that was ripped away. We have other things that have been dangled. And then we have this bad process at the very end. So I totally understand that nationally, it's just, I don't know, they play in the same division as the Giants and the Eagles, and they play the Cowboys twice a year. What's the big deal? It's just, again, factual. Here, it carries so much more weight than it should.
Andy Reid said today that he would coach at least one more NFL season. That launches us in to a couple of headlines here on the way out. Where does he rank all time for you among NFL coaches, Danny?
I haven't really given that a ton of thought in terms of where. I'm always thinking, like, at post-Super Bowl, I'll probably start to do those kind of, not autopsies, but
okay,
you know what I mean.
Okay, but think about it
this way. But he's up there.
What if they win another ring?
Yeah. Then you've got to start, and even if they don't win, like if Philadelphia makes the field goal at the wire, doesn't mean he was a bad coach all of a sudden, but we're talking all-time greats here. So to me, that list, for my lifetime, I never saw, you know, the Vince Lombardi coach, and you obviously need to consider guys like that, innovators and the like, but it's Walsh, it's Belichick, it's Gibbs, and I think Reed needs to be in that Mount Rushmore kind of conversation, right? There, you know, Shula needs to be considered, and there's a number of other guys, but he's now in the all-time situation, where I guess he already was, but you go, well, think about the achievements now in Philadelphia. Look at him in a different light. When he was there, they're getting to four straight NFC title games, not winning any Super Bowls, and it was a yeah, but. Now you revisit that and look back on it, you kind of go, oh, there's a commonality here, right? This guy's really, really good, getting more out of people than maybe we even realized at the time, right? I mean, that's an achievement, obviously. Four NFC title games have nothing to show for it. He didn't have that great of a rep as a head coach. He's a guy that struggled with clock management at times and, you know, it messed up some in-game things here and there. I think he's cleaned all that up to the nth degree and now is as brilliant an innovator as he continues to adapt as anybody's ever been entering whatever it is, almost 30 years of coaching, right? So he needs – I don't know if I've got him fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh. Point is, he is in an all-time type conversation.
Yeah, if you look at Super Bowls, if he wins this weekend, he will have won four Super Bowls. Only Bill Belichick has more. Chuck Knoll with the Steelers, when they ripped off four in short order in the 70s, if you remember, he's the other guy with four. But Reed right now is in a tie with Joe Gibbs and Bill Walsh with three. If you look at all-time wins in the coaching ranks, Don Shula, George Halas, Bill Belichick, and Andy Reid is fourth. I just don't think he comes up
when we talk about
the greatest coaches ever. And, you know, in D.C., obviously, we say this. Joe Gibbs is unbelievably underrated. But Joe Gibbs is 23rd all-time in wins with 150-ish. Andy Reid's closing in on 300 wins, man. Playoffs?
Yeah.
When you look at his success, a lot of it's going to just be chalked up to Patrick Mahomes. Conference championship games, you know who's got the most wins? It's Andy Reid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, outside of Bill Belichick. Andy Reid's got six conference title game wins. And as you said, how many losses? He's had to have coached, I have to think about it, but maybe 10 or 11 conference championship games over the years.
So I think he was 1-3 in Philadelphia, right? They got to the Super Bowl that one time where they had that epic back and forth with New England.
So then he's been 7 in Kansas City. So that's 11 appearances in conference championships.
And they dropped one to New England, again to Brady, and one to Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. So what is that, 8-3?
Wow.
or 7-3, something like that?
Yeah, I just think if he wins another and he gets to four, you're going to start hearing about him being talked about in that way, and it hasn't really happened yet. Let's get you a Caps power play ahead of their game at home tonight. If you guys are making your way to Capital One Arena for the game, Alex Ovechkin's hunt continues. 36 games left this season for Ovi. He has 24 goals on the season. So some quick math would say that he needs 18 goals to break Wayne Gretzky's all-time goal-scoring record, 17 to tie. He is on a .67 goals-per-game pace. He needs to score at a half-goal-per-game pace the rest of the way. He's currently projected, Danny, to break the record in game 79. Of the 82-game season. So with all those numbers said, I don't understand this. Why is it that The Athletic today did a bunch of math and had an algorithm that gave him like an 11% chance to break the record?
11 is very low.
He's on pace to break it in game 79 of 82. He needs to score 0.5 per game. He's currently scoring 0.67 per game. I know he's going to probably slow down from that pace because he hasn't had that pace his whole career. But come on, it's got to be a better chance than that.
Yeah, that's a little low. Bet against him at your own peril is what I always say. But maybe it's baked into the, hey, this isn't sustainable, right, kind of thing. But I don't know. I would have a higher than 11% chance, just sort of given the fact that he's got a nose for it.
Danny Ruye, what's on the docket for you in the big city tonight?
I am headed home. I'm not headed home. I actually headed directly to my son's first outdoor soccer practice of the season. So they'd finished the indoor bits, and now they're doing the outdoor situation right now in a matter of minutes. So I'll be headed out there, and I'll be freezing as the sun goes down. But they are starting their outdoor practices, my friend.
All right, well, enjoy yourself. For Danny and our crew back in the D.C. studios, Toby, Ryan, and company out here helping us out there. It's Dameron, Denton Day and the crew, Grant Paulson saying so long, and thank you for listening to G&D. We're back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Got an excellent show planned for you here on The Fan, live from Radio Row with outstanding guests. So make sure you're locked in at 2 o'clock. We'll have another chance for you to win tickets to see the weekend over at Northwest Stadium as well. Until then, enjoy your evening and enjoy Caps hockey.
Thank you for coming.